Don't touch the dial. Yeah, you're still tuned into the right show, the Earl Ingram Show, at 5:40 a.m. WAUK. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with Sandy Williams. And all of that classical stuff is Christmas music. Yeah, you know, all of them.
Really?
Yeah, everyone that we played has a Christmas connotation with it.
You just have to speak German to understand it.
844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, we were talking about before we went to break about Donald Trump and really the dangerous verbiage that he's using. And you know, Sandy, the trouble with it is he knows what he's doing. Let's go to the phone lines and David from Mech One. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. So I just would ask Sandy this question. So if you look at the article from the USA Today from Terry Collins, September 30th of this year, we're going to have about 2.8 million illegal crossings, and that's up from 2.7 million from the previous year. We've had roughly, since the Biden administration has taken over, about 6 million people. If that were actually made into a state, that actually would be the 20th most populous state in the United States, which would just surpass Wisconsin as a state. And if you look at what New York City is experiencing with the migrant crisis, and they're crying foul because the governor of Texas is busing illegal people, along with the Democratic mayor of El Paso, which doesn't get as much attention. And if you look at Chicago, the mayor of Chicago, Mr. Johnson, they're in complete meltdown. We have to have Joe Biden, I guess, Sandy, do you agree that he should have revoked Title 42? That's my first question. And the second question is, I would think that we would be all for legal immigration, but none of this with this open border policy is a huge consequence, which puts a tremendous strain. I don't care what state it is, what city it is.
Before Sandy answers the question, David, your thoughts about the question that's on the table about Donald Trump and the verbiage that he's using.
I think what Donald Trump is throwing out there is red meat, obviously, for the base. But I think there's a lot of people, and there's a lot of Democrats now, and if you look at what's going on, in New York, the state of New York.
Do you agree with the verbiage he's using?
Well, Dave, let me just cut you off then, because in talking about that rhetoric, I agree that we have an immigration problem and we have a border control problem, and I agree that it needs to be gotten a hold of, and we need to come to grips with it, and we need to come to grips with how we decide how many immigrants we have and how we decide which ones are legal, so that we can have legal immigration. But what I disagree with is the notion that that ought to be blood-based, that that ought to be based on a blood purity concept, all right? That's what we were talking about. Now, with respect to the border and the border problem, there is a problem, and I don't disagree. I do agree that Title 42 needed to be rescinded only because it didn't have a legal basis anymore. The Title 42 was based on the COVID epidemic. It was based on an emergency power that was health based, okay, and that particular rubric for the limitation just was no longer valid. Wouldn't have stood up under a court challenge if it had been tested. But we need a solution. We need Congress to provide a solution, and we need them to do it responsibly. I just simply am appalled at the notion that it ought to be done based on a blood purity basis because, of all people, the three of us on the phone all have a relationship with the notion that blood purity is a horrifying standard. So that's why we were talking about that. I was not talking about that because I favor unrestricted immigration.
So,
and I think that Congress is now decided they're going to face up to it. And maybe they're doing it because of the lever being pulled on the Republican side with respect to aid to Ukraine. But for whatever reason, you know, Congress has failed in the past to do this. They failed under George Bush after his commission to look into it, and they failed every time they meet, they fail to come to grips with this problem. So, you know, I don't think that it's a problem that can be laid to the feet of Joe Biden, for instance. And I think that Donald Trump has made it an issue at the front. Incidentally, you did say something about the immigration to New York that I think wasn't true, which was I think you were linking it to crime. And I think the actual information on this past 2023 period is that crime has gone down in almost every major city and not gone up. But we're so used to talking about crime going up, and we're so used to the media telling us about crimes when they're committed, that we all just leap to that assumption. But I believe that the data this past year has demonstrated that in both 22 and 23, crime went down.
So when you talk about that 42, a proposition or whatever it was called, it was where people had to stop in Mexico.
The basis for it was the health basis of the COVID epidemic, and it was an emergency power that was exercised by Trump in order to issue the order.
All right, David, you want to respond?
Yes, I didn't mention crime at all, Sandy.
Oh, I thought you slipped crime into that. I'm sorry if you didn't. Okay.
What I was saying was that they have a budget crisis is what they have right now, because they're overwhelmed with all these people. They have to put them somewhere, and it's costing them a fortune. And, you know, the mayor.
That's everybody, though, David. That's everybody.
I understand. But that is part of the problem when you have an open border. There is consequences.
Well, we don't. Incidentally, David, we don't have an open border. There have been more arrests made at the border during Biden than there have been in prior periods as well. So, you know, you have to look at both sides of the numbers. The fact is that the border is overwhelmed with numbers. OK. And that is the fact.
So Sandy, the other part of this is this so-called belief that Donald Trump had it all fixed. And if we would have just kept up with Trump's policies, this would have been taken care of, which is absolutely not true. Donald Trump didn't fix the issue. He was able to stall it somewhat, and had people been backed up in Mexico without Biden doing what he did to alleviate some of that, can you imagine what would have been taking place with all of those people backed up in Mexico, Sandy? So he didn't fix it. Let's stop acting like he had the answer to this. He did not.
No, the answer obviously lies in congressional action to fix the process and to create the process. And that's what we seem not to be able to accomplish. You know, the focus on the border has been a bit like the focus on Roe v. Wade, a lot of arm waving, but no solutions. And the arm waving from a political standpoint has had a very attractive result. And so arm waving is maybe the preferred machination here rather than solutions. And I'm afraid that what we need is solutions.
I was listening to Ron Johnson this morning on a different station. And so for those of you in the listening audience, Ron Johnson is going to be joining us on you know, my show, Sandy and my our show in the next week or so. So we're going to have him on the air, and we'll be able to ask him some questions. Thank you for the call, David. Let's go to Julie from Franklin. Good morning to you, Julie. You say what?
Good morning. Well, I mean, first of all, you know, when we talk about the border and we say immigration, it's not immigration. It's illegal immigration. There's ports of entry into this country, and you have to do it legally. You have to go through the steps, and it's hard. And the other thing is, we're, you know, when nobody said Trump fix it, it wasn't Trump. I mean, we have issues with this for decades now, and it goes up and down. But the fact that these people are, and it's not just people from Mexico. It's people coming from a lot of countries. I mean, if you're coming from Venezuela, why are you walking? Why are you, you know, trekking through the whole country of Mexico? Why aren't you staying in Mexico?
Well, again, if everybody is locked into Mexico and there is no entry into our nation, at some point in time, Mexico is on our border, there's going to be a major, you know, issue with all those different people in Mexico. There's going to be an overflow there, and there's got to be a release valve somewhere. You know, so the people are going to keep moving because various issues in their countries, be it crime, be it
let me just say, I think that the future portends a great deal of migration and probably a great deal of pressure. Once people get on the move and migrate, they are going to migrate towards the place where they think they might have the greatest opportunity, right? And the United States has long been viewed as the country of opportunity in the world. And so we can expect a great deal of pressure of in-migration because of a world conflict, which is up now, that we see conflict at various places, as well as climate and as well as economic issues. The climate's going to drive people to move not only because of places that aren't livable, but because of famine and other kinds of things. So we better fix our legislation so we have a process. Because she's right. We need to have legal ports of entry and legal processes, but they need to be up to date and capable of dealing with the numbers that we're going to be forced to deal with.
All right, 844-967-2789. You guys hang on the phone lines. We'll be right back. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams. And, you know, we were talking, as we have been for some time now, about, you know, some of the verbiage that Donald Trump has been using. And, you know, immigration has certainly been at the root of our conversation. Let's go to Bill from O'Connell. Good morning to you, Bill. You say what?
I got to be careful on this topic, girl. I like to talk about it too much. I was just with a class, and we were discussing it. First of all, the people coming across the border at Eagle Pass are documented. They have to go through a process where their name is written down. So this illegal stuff, it's a difference between perception and reality, much like our recession. And yes, there's a problem at the border. There definitely is a problem at the border. The Republican Congress has been given so many opportunities through the Biden administration to solve it, but they walk away and they want to draw attention to it with the election. I am so sick of how they talk about this for one reason. Florida has an incredible amount of illegals. As last I read, it was over 4 million. They aren't coming through Texas. They're coming right on the beaches of Florida, but they don't even want to talk about that because the political implications aren't very good. But they want to highlight this deal at the border. I think most of you remember they were given, I hope they still do, they give everybody across the border a free cell phone. And they say, oh, that's horrible. Oh, we can't afford that. Why do they do that? what people don't understand, when they're given a free cell phone, they got GPS on every one of the people coming over the border. Every one of those people. Wherever that phone is, they know how to find them. It isn't just a mass, horrendous hordes of people that uncontrolled. And then when Abbott and DeSantis promote this, well, let's drop them in New York and Chicago. If I ran Chicago, I was in charge of Chicago, I'd go and say, let's drop 10 postloads of assault rifles on these clowns' doorsteps. They want that. We'll take the immigrants. I just think it's so out of whack in the priorities. Yes, we've got to do a better job. But no, we don't have to build walls. There's many ways. You know, walls are so archaic, and they were great in primeval times for castles. We've got electronics. We'll do the job twice as efficient. The misrepresentation drives me crazy. I'll hang up.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much for the call, as always. So Sandy, Texas Governor Greg Abbott signs bill letting police arrest migrants who cross the border illegally. Let's see if he believes that's the answer.
Well, let me just say that law, you know, there's a federal law of preemption. The federal law, when it regulates a particular thing, and if it regulates it on an interstate basis, it preempts the states from regulating it as well. So the Food and Drug Administration regulates drugs.
Right.
States then can't reach in and start doing their own form of regulation. There will be a Supreme Court test of the ability of a state to regulate immigration in a manner different than the federal law regulates immigration.
So Greg Abbott's, edict signed a bill letting police arrest migrants who cross the border illegally. That is not the law of the land. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's the law of Texas until it's superseded. But what this reminds me of is the extent to which the courts are becoming the resort for the determination of public policy in almost every direction. The conservatives go to court to reverse laws that they don't like that are on the books. And the liberals go to court to overturn the conservative laws that get enacted, and we end up with the courts being very involved in public policy, even though there is this, the Trumpian movement would be essentially contesting the legitimacy of courts at large. So it's a demonstration of the dichotomy here. Trump wants to attack courts as being illegitimate, but he wants to use courts, and people want to use courts when it's in their interest. It just demonstrates that courts are absolutely necessary, and it's necessary that we have courts that we can trust. And one of the dangers of the movement that is represented by Trump is that he wants to attack the legitimacy of government institutions. One of the fundamental ones he's attacking is courts, and it is a fundamental pillar of our democracy.
Let's try to squeeze Bill in from Grant County. Good morning to you, Bill. Thank you very much for the call. Thank you for listening. You say what?
I say, why do we have a wall around the White House then?
I don't know. I didn't say anything about that.
Well, I think he's responding to Bill of Oconomowoc, who's saying that walls are archaic and electronics are what we need. And, there's a question whether walls are necessary or not. I think under the Biden administration, they are completing a portion of the wall that's in the region of, I think, San Antonio. Obviously, for the purpose of restraining human movement, walls have a place. They are not infallible. They do not work perfectly. And they have some negative attributes, when the wall came down in Germany— Reagan and everyone else applauded because that wall represented something that was very heinous. And so I think walls do have that capacity to represent a heinous...
The Great Wall of China?
Yeah, the Great Wall of China was... But walls that have been used to restrain human traffic in modern times have typically been looked at askance, okay? And the wall that surrounds Gaza, for instance, is troublesome. And the wall that was the Iron Curtain was troublesome. And I think that we'll find that we would be much better off solving our problem with Mexico with public policy and not necessarily with walls. But I would not deny that in certain circumstances, walls have a place.
844-967-2789. Hang on the line. We got to pay some bills. Sandy Williams and Earl Ingram. Be right back. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams. You know, we've been stuck here dealing with the immigration issue and the verbiage that Donald Trump has been using. So let's go to Jack from Merrimack. Thank you very much for the call, Jack. You say what?
Well, first of all, the immigration problem is not so much at the southern border, and it's not so much of people sneaking into Florida. According to some information that I've read on NPR websites, something like two-thirds of the so-called illegal immigrants are people that simply come into this country legally on a visa, and they decide they like it here, so they overstay their visa. Those are the people, if you're looking for undocumented, somebody to blame for undocumented immigrants, that's the issue, the major issue. Will a border wall help? I don't really know. But it seems that one of the other problems is this. Republicans over the years have regularly cut back government services, government finances, and yet even when they've been in control, like the first 2 years of the Trump administration, they have refused to do anything about the immigration so-called problem. Nothing has actually been done by them. And they've cut back all these services. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, it's the immigration naturalization services that are the problem. They're not, if we had enough people to handle the legally incoming immigrants. And that's in my opinion the other half of the problem.
Jack, go ahead, finish your point.
Okay, and the last thing I want to say is it's a typical situation. The Republicans essentially cause the problem, and then they say, oh, we've got this terrible problem, and it's all the Democrats' fault.
So you said those overstaying their visas, if they weren't offered jobs in this country, many of them wouldn't overstay their visas. Their job, I mean, There's gold in them Tar Heels.
Well, only if
there's opportunity.
Well, that employment would be illegal.
Yeah.
I mean, so
well, it's
so,
happening.
Yeah. So, there obviously is a lot of that, so that the people who are not here on a legal basis for a permanent on a permanent basis or on a basis that allows them to get jobs apparently are finding employment.
So Jack, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. You know, Sandy, he did point out, you know, Jack, as always, is very well. His aptitude on these things is really always right.
Yeah.
And
I mean, he makes a good point, one that I really hadn't thought to research, but apparently NPR presented it. But, yeah, people come into this country on visas and stay, you know, and that's a very common way for people to get here legally and stay here then unlawfully. And that's far different than what the picture is, which is of droves of people crossing the southern border in the dark of night.
Let's get to, we had a couple other things I wanted to get to, Sandy, before we got out of here. Senator Bernie Sanders is really starting to apply pressure to our government in the fact that we are selling weapons to Israel, and he's challenging our involvement in what's going on in Gaza because we are financing weapons and certainly money in supporting Israel in this war. Now, you know, Bernie Sanders is a Jewish guy. So, you know, he can say that, and he can, here's what he said. The scale of the suffering in Gaza is unimaginable. This humanitarian cataclysm is being caused by indiscriminate bombing carried out with American bombs and money. This is a United States senator saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I think he's expressing an opinion that is actually
and
shared.
And he knows.
Well, I think it's an opinion that is shared as well by some Israelis, people who live in Israel, as well as those observing this, as well as, I think, our State Department, Blinken, who's himself a Jew, is beginning to express the same view that look, the right to defend yourself doesn't necessarily permit or justify some of the conduct which appears to be going on with respect to how the war against Hamas is being waged. And like I said last week, I think one can question the methods being used by the Israeli government without one being viewed as anti-Israel or anti-Zion, and two, you can question that without being viewed as anti-Semitic. I think the policies of the Israeli government are actually, they need to maybe be protected from themselves, because I think the way that things are ongoing right now is beginning to isolate Israel in the world of opinion, okay, and in world opinion, and that's a dangerous thing for Israel to do.
So in this instance, Sandy, Bernie Sanders, he said, that's why I introduced a resolution to force the United States to reckon with its complicity. He is bringing pressure on our government for their involvement that we don't see and that most Americans aren't aware of, that many of the weapons that Israel is using, we are supplying those weapons.
Well, I mean, I think the tie between Israel and the United States is inextricable. And the tie in with our intelligence agencies is very close. And I'm sure that we are aiding them in many ways associated with intelligence gathering, with surveillance, with satellite surveillance, with many capabilities that we have, as well as providing them with munitions. I think there was a publication last week of the notion that we had sold them, for instance, phosphorus weapons, white phosphorus weapons, which have put the potential to be sort of horrendous if used against populations. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that all of this should be subject to evaluation and analysis. And to be honest with you, I would view it as maybe saving Israel from itself because some of the processes that they've decided to set out upon, led by Netanyahu, who is himself a very controversial figure in Israel these days, possibly aren't good for Israel in the long run.
You know, certainly not good for President Biden either, because President Biden has been pushing Netanyahu and saying, hey, hold up, slow down. And Netanyahu is basically just totally ignored, you know, for the most part, especially after those three Israeli hostages, were murdered.
Were killed a couple of days ago. Well, I think that this kind of a conflict puts whoever is the head of the United States in it between a rock and a hard spot, because it's a very difficult situation, and the fact is that the solution to the situation is something that needs to be resolved, and that situation is the situation of Gaza and the West Bank, and the lack of a two-state solution, and it's clear that Bibi Netanyahu is not very interested in the two-state solution. Many people in Israel are interested in the two-state solution, and so is the United States.
So, Sandy, I think the pressure is going to continue to be ramped up, because even inside of Israel, people are saying, hey, strike the deal to get the hostages out. We don't want to hear about the continued fighting. Let's make the priority getting the hostages out, right? I mean, that clearly is what you're hearing from the families of the loved ones whose hostages, after they saw three get murdered, they're all concerned, or get killed. They're all concerned that, hey, there is no conversation about releasing the hostages anymore.
Well, and I suspect there's also just a reality of the notion that reducing Hamas to rubble is not anything like a solution in the long run, and I think the Israelis, many of the Israelis, are impatient for a long-term solution so they can get over the notion of having rockets fired out of Gaza and out of the Golan Heights. I think that most of Israel is impatient for a long-term peaceful solution, and obviously the path to that has been difficult, but I think the rest of the world ought to find a way to assist the parties to make sure that Israel is kept safe in the future, and that so is a Palestinian state.
So let me ask you, Sandy, because, you know, the United States has leverage and sway with what happens with Israel. We clearly do. And you know, we can control some things, the continued supply of those weapons, phosphorus weapons that you're talking about, that, you know, do untold harm long after they've been exploded. We could certainly say we're going to put an end to giving you those things if you don't follow what we know that the world is saying. Sandy, it's not anymore just a couple nations. The world is saying, the United Nations and others, hey, let's end this, right? And so you can keep ignoring that and saying, well, we don't need to be a part of any of those things.
Well, I think much the way there's a belief that Putin is playing and counting upon the lack of resolve in the United States for his policies with respect to Ukraine, there's an ability of the rest of the world to both watch and even impact and affect our policy. We have a democracy. We have open access to what's going on. And in many respects, we have the capacity to affect what's going on politically, for sure. And there's no question that Israel is in a position to affect politics within the United States. And so, you know, it's a delicate proposition. And it's a delicate proposition for any leader. And Israel is in a delicate position. It has been since it was formed. And I guess the impatience that might exist is the fact that Israel needs to be a part of the solution to provide them with a long-term security that is peaceful. And so far, that hasn't been achieved. It hasn't been achieved for almost any period of time. The period since the formation of Israel is marked on the calendar with periodic open conflict and with terrorist conduct in the meantime.
All right, 844-967-2789. Hold that thought. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll return. To what unbelievably is the last couple minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. You know, Sandy, as the war in Ukraine slugs on, it's, you know, there's some talk about the Ukrainian people starting to become a little disenchanted, discontented with the war. You know, this war that's going on, what we don't see is the suffering of the Ukrainian people, right? The sacrifices that they're making along the way. We hear about people saying, you know, the heroic Ukraine's military people, but the people of Ukraine are suffering mightily, and they're losing in this. And so they're not the president. They're not traveling around the world. They're having to live with these issues. Your thoughts?
Well, Zelensky wasn't elected unanimously. And prior to the invasion by Russia, Zelensky probably held on to a fairly slim majority. He represented a nationalist, a more right-wing side of Ukrainian politics. And there was opposition to him that existed at the time of his election and undoubtedly existed during the period. There were people in Ukraine calling for a negotiation with Russia at the time when Russia had them surrounded with troops, and that was sort of the option being considered. And so once the invasion started, the coverage of those who might be dissident to Zelensky was non-existent, and people were not looking at, and it was very difficult during the early periods of that invasion for those who might be politically opposed to Zelensky to voice their opinion. Those opinions have now become more vocal. And of course, it is, you know, what Ukrainians are experiencing is horrifying. Their infrastructure has been destroyed in many parts of the country. Many, many of the people in the 18 to 30 age range have been casualties in this war. They've probably lost an entire generation so far, and so the suffering is great. And you can expect in a period of suffering that there might be a wavering of support. I do believe that he continues to have support in the range of 67% or some such poll. So that's actually significant majority support. But there is obviously also starting to be some questioning ongoing, and there will undoubtedly be pressure within Ukraine to reach some kind of ceasefire, armistice, or some form of diplomatic solution to the war, and that will probably increase over time. One could expect that to be the case.
Let's go to Tom from West Dallas. Good morning to you, Tom. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. There's a headline on the Huffington Post right now that says Benjamin Netanyahu brags he's proud to have prevented a Palestinian state, and he is proud that he has thwarted or that's not the word. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Go ahead.
He prevented Biden from or rebuking Biden on all this. And something like that, you know, headlines like that bother me. If Netanyahu is really being like that, why are we? And also, I guess I'm sorry. I'm all over the place. You know, I can understand how Ukraine needs money, but I've yet to hear Israel crying for money, yet we are all saying, oh, we have to get Israel money now. What is behind all this? I'll let you guys, I'm sorry, I'm all over the place.
No, that's okay, man. We got it. You know, different things going on. Sandy, you want to?
Well, I suspect that Israel hasn't had to vocally ask for it, although they undoubtedly need it. The war so far has been relatively short in duration, and so the duration of that short duration limits the amount of money that might be required. You understand that the money flowing to Ukraine is paying government officials. It's basically helping them operate a government at a time when their economy is fractured and almost non-existent, and their tax revenues must be severely depleted, so their ability to have a government is very limited. Bibi Netanyahu is a complex fellow. He and Donald Trump are sort of joined at the hip. It's interesting. Donald Trump suggested that if he were president, the war wouldn't have happened, but interestingly, it happened when Bibi Netanyahu was the head of Israel, and so I'm not sure how Trump could possibly have mitigated the chance for the war, and the United States' response to this has been immediate, and so I'm not sure how it is that Donald Trump would have modified the impact of this. So I think that the Israeli war with Hamas is something that, like I said, it's in Israel's interest to conduct this war in a manner which realizes support from the rest of the world.
They haven't chosen to do that.
And they haven't chosen to do that so far because their manifest intent is to, as they say, destroy Hamas. And if that means to track down, yeah, it's impossible. And I think what's clear is that the infrastructure of Hamas is terribly difficult to attack. And what they need to do is figure out a way to disarm Hamas and to make Hamas irrelevant to the people of Palestine. And I'm afraid that what they're doing right now is just the reverse. They're making Hamas much more relevant.
The only way to do that is politically, right?
Well, it's diplomatically and politically.
Diplomatically, right.
Yeah, I mean, they need to find a solution so that the people of Gaza are not made to feel and to generate generations of terrorists out of the conditions that exist. And so what they need to do is face up to that and address that.
All right. Great as always, Sandy. Thank you very much. And, you know, we'll be back on Friday. But thank all of you for making the show go. Thank all of you for listening and calling. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you, Calvin. Couldn't do it without you as well. Up next, Jane Metnair and Greg Bach, as goes Wisconsin. We'll be right back.